First of all, it's, do you know who you are? Do you know who you are? Do you know what your values are? Do you know what your intentions are in the world? Do you know why you have this job? Do you know where this job is taking you? So there's that self-knowledge piece that is the first essential part of it. And then the second part of it is how that shows up. How do you express that? How does that show up in your actions? How does that show up in your words?
Welcome back to another episode of Design to Be Conversation, presented by Design to Be and hosted by Design to Be co-founder and CEO, me, Rachel Weissman. In this show, I have conversations with design leaders about how they continue to learn, grow, and skill build throughout their careers. Each episode will not only help you navigate your career more effectively, but they will even enable you to build better products as a result. Let's dive into it. In this episode, I speak with Jesse James Garrett. Jesse has been one of the most prominent voices in digital product design for more than 20 years. His career path highlights include co-founding the groundbreaking UX consultancy, Adaptive Path, writing the foundational book, The Elements of User Experience, whose iconic five-plane model has become a staple of the field, and defining Ajax, the dynamic interaction model that transformed web technology and design in the Web 2.0 era. His work has been published in more than a dozen languages, and he is a frequent keynote speaker on making designers and organizations more human-centered in their work. We dive into leadership through relationships, how most struggles of unhealthy design teams can be traced back to unhealthy relationship dynamics, paired with leading with authenticity, how too many designers feel they have to shed some part of who they are in order to fit the mold of leadership. But leadership has no mold and comes in every shape imaginable. Welcome, Jesse, to the show.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
When we were emailing a bit back and forth of what are the different topics and arenas that we can dive in and play in, we landed on a leadership through relationship and leading with authenticity. But before diving into this very broad cloud topic that we'll be more specific on, I'd love for you to provide folks a bit of color of maybe like twofolds in your career. For one, what sparked your interest in becoming a designer? And then two, what sparked your interest or what was the shift and pull into stepping more into this coaching role?
Sure. My path into design was a pretty circuitous one. I have no formal background or training as a designer, but I was working as a writer, writing for websites back in the 90s. And in that role, I inevitably found myself collaborating with designers who were at the time working with the fairly primitive tools of late 90s web design. And I started to realize that especially on the web, content and design had to work hand in hand in order to achieve what we wanted to achieve. And if I was only looking at the content side of things, I was only kind of seeing part of the challenge. And so I started digging into more of those design kind of issues and eventually made the switch right around the time that web design was shifting from the sort of graphic design oriented practices of the 90s into the 2000s and into user experience design and human-centered practices. And that was when I started my company, Adaptive Path, which was one of the very first UX consultancies. And we were able to help spread the word and help people see the potential power of these practices. And so that was super fun. That was a great time to be, well, it still is a great time to be in this field. But over time, as a consultant, I was always kind of limited in my impact because somebody brought me on for a job and a job had a scope and a job had a budget. And meanwhile, design practice was taking root in organizations of all kinds all over the world. And they were learning and adapting what we were doing as consultants, internalizing it, making it a part of who they were. And we were always kind of one step removed from that and didn't really get to be a part of that. So when Adaptive Path was acquired by the bank Capital One in the US in 2014, I went in-house and got to be a part of an in-house team. And I got to see much, much closer the challenges that leaders were facing in maturing design organizations and bringing these new practices into these existing organizations. And I started getting really interested in the challenges that they were facing. And that's when leadership coaching became the focus of my attention, as I was looking for ways to support the design leaders across Capital One and helping them raise the quality of the work that they were doing and helping them build healthy teams.
So naturally, you realized, oh, hey, I'm kind of already wearing this coaching hat.
Yeah, I think that the shift for me was thinking that we were facing systemic problems when they were actually individual problems, that I was trying to help shape Capital One Design as an organization of several hundred people and help to create a culture that would cohere across such a large and diverse group. But what I found was that culture was only part of the equation. And there was this other huge piece of the equation that had to do with the skills that the leaders brought, and especially the way that the leaders showed up in relationship with other people within the organization. And so that was when I started to get really interested in those topics and how to bring those skills to the leaders that I was working with.
Can you unpack a little bit then the difference between the skills that we individually bring to the table versus how culture supports that, how they can support each other, how their intention, that kind of like the interwovenness of that?
Yeah, well, certainly culture is the accumulated result of a lot of individual choices. And culture kind of dictates which choices get magnified, amplified, celebrated, and which choices get sort of pushed down and pushed out in terms of visibility within the organization. And that ends up shaping what the organization talks about and doesn't talk about, does and doesn't do, and all of those kinds of things. So culture often comes back to the communication practices of an organization, the language that an organization uses, the interaction habits that the organization cultivates. But a lot of that stuff comes back to the specifics that the leaders bring and the specifics that the leaders model in these areas. What are the communication practices of the leaders? What are the modes of engagement? What's the language that the leaders are using? What are the ways in which they're modeling to their teams how to interact with one another? And so the leaders have this enormous, disproportionate influence on culture at the same time that they are subjected to it.
What a dance. What a dance. There's so much there and it's so fun, but let's go down the highway of leadership through relationship. So can you start just to provide a bit of color of like what that means and really paint a backdrop of how folks can start to think about this?
Well, the first thing that's important to realize about this context is the moment where we are in the evolution and the maturation of design practices within industry, which is that these design practices and these design functions are new to a lot of organizations. Many of these leaders are the first design leader that an organization has ever had. And so they are in a different kind of a position than leaders of other functions, more established functions. If you've had a marketing department for 60 years, that's a really, really different mode of engagement as an executive level leader than for being the brand new first design leader ever in an organization. And so a lot of the people who find themselves into those roles, they have had no mentors because there's been no one to go before them. They have had no role models, except possibly role models outside design that may or may not be appropriate for a design leader. And there's no roadmap. There's no guidebook here. There are no best practices to fall back on. And so many of these people got into leadership without even really understanding what that job was going to be, what that was going to entail, what that was going to ask of them. And honestly, often the people who gave them that job didn't know either. All they knew was that design was getting to be a more and more important function. They needed a leader. They picked the person who seemed to know the most about design in the organization, elevated that person, but now that person has a whole different set of responsibilities that has nothing to do with anything that they've done before. And those responsibilities are about negotiation. They're about visibility. They are about influence. They ultimately come down to how effectively that leader can relate with the individuals who are responsible for the complementary functions to design throughout the organization. How effectively they can relate to the business leadership that may not and probably doesn't know or care the first thing about the fundamentals of design. And so being able to manage those relationships ends up being a huge factor in whether or not a leader is successful.
Maybe we can start with kind of rooting in a bit of a narrative or a story of possibly something that you've experienced yourself or someone that you've worked with and how they have gone about doing this well and or struggling.
Yeah. Well, when I was working at Capital One, this was the reason that this issue really came onto my radar, was because we were trying to create a consistent culture across the organization, but we were seeing wildly differing results in different places and trying to understand why we had some teams that seemed to have really strong, healthy cultures and other teams that had these dysfunctional cultures. We had these superstar teams that would outperform, outdeliver, one success after another. Everybody wanted to get on that team, but nobody could get on that team because nobody ever wanted to leave that team. They were tight. They were bonded. And then these other teams that seemed to have all of the same things going for them that were characterized by strife and dysfunction and drama and disappointment and failure and underperforming and trying to figure out what the difference was there. And what I saw among the leaders of these superstar teams was that they were able to connect with others better. They were able to connect better with their peers in product, in engineering, to be able to align around common goals, and to educate those functions as to how they should interact with design. So that's making things better for everybody within the design team, as well as everybody in those complementary teams as well, because working together benefits everybody. But it also was about the environments that they created within their teams and how much did they model constructive feedback and compassionate practices in design that honored and respected people and trusted people, and how these leaders were able to create environments of mutual trust and support among their teams gave them the ability to take greater creative chances because those teams were in an environment where they felt like everybody around them had their back, you know? And so they could take the risk of saying the crazy thing. And then somebody else could take the risk to say, maybe that thing is not so crazy. And then the team would run and do it. So there's a strong connection, I feel, between the ability of the leader to model and facilitate trusting relationships within their teams and the team's capacity for innovation.
How can someone go about providing that space or communicating in that way?
Well, this is where authenticity comes into it, I think, because a lot of these leaders, especially first-time leaders who haven't had role models of what good design leadership looks like, they look around and they appropriate models that seem to work for other functions in the organization. So they look at the CTO, for example, and see the way that that person does that job. And they go, oh, well, that's what an executive level leader in this organization looks like. And I should behave in those ways. And design has different requirements than those other functions. There is, I believe, a higher degree of personal care required. So in terms of the tactics, it means being able to sit down and have a meaningful conversation with someone about what's really working and what really isn't in their roles. And to be able to listen from a position of having your own point of view about the way that things should be and what's best for the team, for the product, for the organization. What happens often is that a leader in that situation will feel the need to speak for the organization rather than speaking from their own perspective and from their own understanding. And that disconnects them from the people that they're working with. It breaks collaboration when they sort of take on that formal official voice of authority. And so engaging in these creative processes, as opposed to the other kinds of processes that happen in organizations that are more straightforward and execution oriented, these creative generative processes require a different kind of engagement to support people in taking creative chances. So part of it has to do with how the leader engages with people one-on-one. Part of it has to do with how the leader engages with the team in a team context. Are they including all the voices in the conversation? Are they willing to own when they don't know something? Are they willing to reconsider their opinions? When they model these behaviors, then the team starts reflecting those same behaviors too, and they engage with each other in those same ways.
Can you provide an example between the difference between a design leader speaking from the perspective of the organization versus the design leader speaking from their own authentic perspective?
It's about the leader engaging the team from a place of shared values and shared purpose. So designers want to work with leaders whom they can look at and feel like they know where this person is coming from. They know what this person's values are, and they can trust that this person is going to look out for them. It's going to look out for the quality of the work. It's going to look out for their ability to do the work successfully. A leader who is able to speak from a place of really genuinely wanting to protect and care for the same things that their designers want to protect and care for is going to foster a more trusting environment. A leader who, every time that a designer tries to engage them around overcoming challenges, simply repeats the company line about what the company's priorities are and what the company's constraints are, and basically repeats all the same things that you could have heard from any other leader in the organization, it's not really what a designer needs to hear from a design leader.
So honoring both, yes, what the company's values and ethos are, and also in those moments where it's really key to cultivate a deeper sense of trust, leading into your own authenticity.
Yeah, disengaged leaders create disengaged teams. And one way of disengaging is to let go of having your own opinion, you know, and to just kind of do what you're told and hand the orders down. And what I have seen in my experience is that that is a recipe for disconnection, disengagement, and dysfunction.
We are going to take a short break to hear an exciting update from Design to Be. Design to Be has been researching and ideating on a digital product. We're super excited about what's in the works, but we need your help. We are looking to chat with heads of design, design managers, and IC designers to better understand the design process at your organization. If you are open for a 30-minute call with me and or Design to Be's co-founder and CTO, Keith Stevens, head to designtobe.com/app to join our waitlist. That's designtobe.com/app. After adding your name to the waitlist, we'll then follow up via email. Over a short call, we'll share what we're building, get your feedback, and learn more about your team's design process. These calls directly impact the future of what we're building at Design to Be. So thank you for your support, and we're excited to continue to build Design to Be together. Now, back to the show. In this umbrella of leadership through relationship, have you found there to be a difference in the way of whether it be relating in general or communication, whether it be through internally when collaborating with fellow designers versus cross-functionally?
Well, cross-functional relationships are different from relationships that you'll have with the people within your team. First of all, the power dynamics are different. But also, people in your cross-functional relationships, they're going to have different incentives, different metrics, different ways of measuring their own success. And the more deeply you can understand what success looks like to your partners, the more effectively you can help them create that and get their help in creating what success looks like for you. The design leader is very much a diplomat in this regard. It is about meeting the folks who live across the river with their strange customs and their peculiar language and their different ways of doing things and coming to a place of common understanding and establishing a sense of a commitment to shared goals and a shared sense of purpose, and then keeping that up. I think that the thing that happens is that a leader comes into the role. They're like, okay, my first job is to get to know everybody. They get to know everybody, and then they drop all those relationships that aren't immediately relevant to exactly what's in front of them in the moment. And they lose their intentionality around those relationships. And then those relationships suffer as a result.
So shifting maybe a little bit into this authenticity bucket a bit, I'm curious how you define authenticity.
I think it breaks down into a couple of different parts. First of all, it's, do you know who you are? Do you know who you are? Do you know what your values are? Do you know what your intentions are in the world? Do you know why you have this job? Do you know where this job is taking you? So there's that self-knowledge piece that is the first essential part of it. And then the second part of it is how that shows up. How do you express that? How does that show up in your actions? How does that show up in your words? I think that people can assume that when we talk about authenticity, we're talking about like radical honesty, radical candor, radical 100% truthfulness all the time. And that's actually not what I'm talking about, because that's impossible for a leader. A leader has to be able to control the flow of information. It's part of a leader's job. But again, I think leaders who are going through the motions, emulating models that don't reflect their own values, don't reflect their own sense of who they are, their own sense of purpose in the world, end up disconnected from their work and end up eventually unhappy and burned out, and they don't know why. It's because you've been doing a job that you weren't invested in and pouring yourself into something for reasons that you never really understood what they were because you didn't look at them. And they find themselves in kind of an empty place of disconnection from themselves. And so that's part of what's essential for leaders to be able to show up fully for others, is for them to be clear with themselves about what they're doing and why they're doing it.
I'm curious, from your own personal career journey, if there were any light bulb moments or shifts in understanding your own authentic leadership journey.
Yeah, well, that's been a big one, because I definitely found myself in leadership roles that I wasn't prepared for, found myself emulating some, I would say, not very good models. I think I was definitely a bit of a creative diva earlier in my career. And over time, I came to realize that I was undermining myself. I came to realize that I was putting myself farther away from what I wanted to achieve by being difficult and demanding. And I realized that I could achieve more by giving other people more investment in what I was doing. And it was hard for people to get invested in what I was doing because of the way that I was leading.
What helped you arrive at this realization?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could say that it was a light bulb moment, but it was more of like a creeping doubt kind of over years that kind of built up, the sense that maybe I wasn't getting what I wanted from the choices that I was making.
I'm curious then, upon slowly having this realization, how did you go about navigating that?
I'm no longer with Capital One, but when I was with the bank, I had the opportunity to work with a very large, diverse group of leaders all at once. And that was a different kind of experience than I'd had before.
What was your role?
So when the bank acquired the company in 2014, I went in-house and was responsible for a range of cultural initiatives that would bind that loose confederation together. So all of the stuff around knowledge sharing and kind of defining what we stood for and those kinds of things, things that would help create a larger sense of community for the organization. And so working on that range of initiatives required me to engage across the various business units on an ongoing basis. And I got to see what they were doing. And I got to see what was working and what didn't. And that was an education for me. It provided a little bit of a controlled context, right? Because we were all part of the same company. We're all in the same boat. So why were these people having these results and these people having these results? And what did that mean about me and the choices that I'd been making up to that point in my career? The occasion of selling my company was a tremendous opportunity for me to reflect and try to figure out how to do things differently and try to figure out what I could teach to others. And that, I think, was really what spurred it.
So where my mind is going a bit is how folks can apply your story and your experience to what they're going through. And kind of like the parallel that I see is a gracious gift was the elevation that you landed in. So thus you could see dynamics from a very like high level. And I think that can still be applied to folks that are maybe not the most senior person in the room. Maybe they're a high level IC, any kind of IC, like a first line manager. And it's still cultivating this mindset of how can I talk to people in different parts of the organization? Or even if the design team's really small, how can I connect with designers at other similar size organizations? And I feel like you landed in this amazing container, and folks who also land in some type of container where they can poke and play with and see and observe and collect data can also do that. And yet it can also be applied in other domains as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this relationship awareness can start way before you become a leader. I think that some of the challenges that these leaders are having come about because they didn't pay attention to this stuff sooner. And you absolutely can. It's just that the nature of the designer's role often involves very long stretches of time of focused individual work. And it takes an extra level of mindfulness to build into your routine the engagement with other people that keeps your relationships alive. It's very easy to disappear down the Figma rabbit hole and just spend all day there and forget that there are other people around you. And so I think that for anyone at that IC level to recognize that part of being a contributor is going beyond your contribution to your connections with the rest of the organization.
Yeah. So more in this authenticity space. So say someone wants to go about like cultivating these skills for themselves. What's a good place that they could get started on?
One thing that I've always thought was an important part of the designer's process is reflection and taking a step back and asking yourself what you've learned from what you've done. It's very difficult when you're working in a production context to create that space for yourself, but to the extent that you can, if you can be as reflective about the people around you, the way that you're engaging with them, and the reasons why you do what you do, as you are about the nature of good design, the nature of good design process, what it takes to deliver design quality. If you can treat these things with a similar level of respect and consideration and reflection, you will be well prepared to step into leadership when the time comes.
What are ways that folks can go about reflecting and maybe just some examples of how they could go about integrating this into their day-to-day?
Finding the space for reflection that works for you. So maybe that is on your morning run. Maybe that is in the evening with a glass of wine. Maybe that is walking down the park and having lunch on a park bench. Maybe that is finding a reflection buddy that you get together with and spend half an hour just kind of going back and forth about the things that are coming up for you. Different people have different modes for this. It always, though, requires intention and time. And so setting the intention and setting aside the time, I think, are the major obstacles there. And then after that, it's just a matter of like what gets you into a space where you can take a step back from your work and look at it in a larger context and ask yourself, how am I growing through the work that I'm doing? Where is that growth taking me? What am I getting better at? And is it what I want to be getting better at? And the more you know those things, the more you can set a direction for your own career that can inspire others.
So I'm curious what your answers are to those questions right now in your career.
The work that I'm doing right now, which I am doing private one-on-one leadership coaching with design executives all around the world these days over Zoom. And it's really different from the kinds of work that I've done before in that at times I've been a champion of ideas, the idea of user experience, the idea of human-centered design. At times, I have been a champion for teams and organizations. And this work gives me an opportunity to be a champion for individuals directly. And that, I am finding, is giving my work a great deal of meaning and a tremendous sense of purpose and satisfaction.
Under this umbrella of what feels true for you right now, what's the cadence that you're going about checking in and reflecting? And what's currently your own reflection practice to check resonance here?
I have a couple of things that I do. One is that I have spaces built into my day for me to step away from my desk that are kind of designated for this. They're not long. They're just little 15-minute breaks, but they are key. And I use those times to reflect. I like to go for walks. I find moving my body very supportive of that process of reflection. So getting out and moving around a little bit, I find helps a lot. So those are some of my practices.
I found consistently almost all of the quality ideas that come through are when I'm not at my desk. And it's either I'm working out, I'm meditating, I'm in the shower, I'm cooking, I'm going on a walk, whatever it may be.
Well, when I'm working with my coaching clients, I encourage them not to do our coaching sessions at their desks because I want to shift their perspective as part of the work. I want them to open to new ideas.
So shifting to a couple closing questions, Jesse. With this cloud that we've been playing in of leadership through relationship and leading from authenticity, it all falls under the umbrella of learning and growing and skill building. So I'm curious why it's important for designers or really anyone to continue to learn, grow, and skill build.
I genuinely feel that people who are not actively growing are prone to unhappiness fundamentally. I think that we are at our best. We have the most to give and we have the most to become when we are actively committed to pushing ourselves in new directions and pushing ourselves, challenging our ideas of who we are and asking ourselves what we could be. And for designers, that ongoing inquiry is an essential part of your creative growth. And for design leaders, it's an essential part of your career growth. Your growth as a leader is what will propel you toward greater and greater success.
And if you could ask one thing of the folks listening, maybe one thing that they could get started on once they press pause, take out their headphones, whatever it may be, that they could get started on today, what would it be?
Figure out how to make the people around you successful. And figure out how to do it in a way that honors yourself.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Jesse, for your time and your candor and your insights and your stories. I so, so, so appreciate our conversation.
Thank you so much. This has been fun.
That wraps up another episode of Design to Be Conversation. Thank you so much for listening. If you're curious to learn more about Design to Be, head over to designtobe.com. That is designtobe.com. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you may listen. Or share this episode with a fellow designer, your team, or on social. These are all excellent ways to support the show. And as always, Thanks so much for listening.